I think I'd rather die in a nuclear war than go to Olean.
Penn State was in the Atlantic.
You know what? You know what? The Lowell Spinners.
Good evening. This is Curry Hicks Sage coming to you live from my apartment in New York City. This is, of course, the UMass Basketball Podcast. Our producer, the great Bennett Carroll, is in our nation's capital, not with us. And he had some wireless connectivity issues, as sometimes is the case with BK. He will, of course, edit this, and he'll do so brilliantly and with some special segues tonight. So if you're a first-time listener, you're not familiar with UMass Twitter and some of the inane topics that come up there, you will be a little confused, or even longtime listeners will be a little confused tonight by the segues between segments. So listen closely for that. Some special stuff. If you're confused, just shoot me a tweet or a DM and I'll explain it. Tonight's show, of course, brought to you by Five College Movers. World-class, stress-free moving in the Pioneer Valley and beyond. If you want to go anywhere, go with Five College Movers. They'll get the job done. I had the great pleasure of meeting my sponsor of this program, Pat, who runs Five College Movers this weekend. And at Fairfield, we had a great time. Thanks for the beer, buddy. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for sponsoring the show. Thanks for supporting UMass Athletics and UMass Hoops. And let's get right into it. All right. I don't have a whole lot prepared tonight. I'm going to be totally honest with you. I have so much swirling around in my mind that I don't even really have notes. I have just so many thoughts going through my head after what was a fantastic early season win over Northeastern, 80-71 here on Tuesday, November 12th, just a week after the season started, UMass moving to 3-0 with the win. And it could not be a more encouraging 3-0. I think there's a temptation to restrain myself, to kind of rein it in, to remind myself of the factual realities at play, that this is a group of freshmen, you know, that they're going to take their lumps, and all that is true, and we can get into that, and I'm sure we'll get into it. Speak in terms of, you know, calling things as I see them and in terms of reality. But the reality is that I'm into this program because I'm a fan, and I've never hidden that fact. And I have an unusual, perhaps unhealthy, fanatical obsession with UMass basketball. Always talk, I've said this, and I used to, you know, sort of mask the fact, you know, and was a little sheepish about it, but that's the thing I'm into. When I was 8, 9, 10 years old, I got hooked, and that's where things have gone. And the persona of Curry Hicks Sage and this and that has become a thing, and on Twitter and whatever, and we've got a great little thing going with UMass Twitter and the fan base. But the other reality is that there hasn't been a whole lot to actually be excited about from a pure fan perspective over the last several years. Frankly, since the start of this podcast, there's been very little to be excited about. And so you do the show and you make friends on, you know, with people on Twitter, and you live in these sort of strange online worlds, and it's a blast, and you know, you kind of bullshit and you become self-deprecating, and you kind of, you know, you don't make fun of the program, but you get through it together. You know, it's gallows humor, especially last year, you know, when you're 11-21 and just, it's a disappointing year. And then, you know, and so a lot of the banter around the program ends up being, if not cynical, it becomes a coping mechanism, right? You're getting through it. You're just getting through it. And reasons for authentic optimism and enthusiasm are just not always apparent. They're not always there. And so what we're experiencing tonight, and what we've experienced, quite frankly, since that, like 10 minutes into that first exhibition game, if we're being totally honest, is genuine optimism. It came earlier, actually. I mean, I think the Tony Bergeron interview got me really fired up. I think hearing the way Matt talked in the offseason got me really fired up. But I'll be honest, you know, as a longtime UMass fan, you know, you've heard it all, you've seen it all, and you believe it when you see it. And so there was more than a modicum of restraint informing my approach to the season. And that, in many ways, I think manifested itself particularly acutely prior to my recording of the preview pod, which was really only like, I guess, 10 days ago, something like that, 2 weeks ago. I think that was when my optimism, I started reining it in a little. I was like, I don't want to get myself, I don't want to get too high, you know. And I had all these question marks, and, you know, particularly about point guard play, and, you know, we're a year away and blah, 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 and we have a few pieces coming in the next year, and, you know, it's always a year away, right? Well, I'm just going to cut ahead now, because 8 days into the basketball season, and it's frankly difficult to contain my enthusiasm. What we've witnessed the first 3 games this year is nothing short of delightful. And whether that will continue, I can't say. Whether we'll have an egregious loss to Central Connecticut or Rider or Maine or somebody else along the way, I cannot say. I suspect there will be one or two of those. But what I can say is that what we've seen over the course of the last 8 days is extraordinarily encouraging, and more importantly, from a fanatical fan perspective, a whole lot of fucking fun. This basketball plays more team-oriented basketball than any basketball. I would imagine I'll take this tonight during the questions, but I think I saw one come in where someone said something to the effect of, like, you know, what's different this time? And I don't know if anything's different this time. I'm still forecasting like a 500 slate, right? Like I said, that even to get to 500, they basically had to go 4-1 or 5-0 to start the season, because the season really gets difficult right after that. So on one hand, you know, let's not get carried away. But the way this team moves the ball, the way this team clearly seems to enjoy being around one another, the way this team plays unselfishly, and the way this team still has a ways to go in terms of getting better. It's clear that the ceiling is nowhere near being reached, and it's clear that Cy Chapman and maybe even Devaji Walker will likely be, you know, will be pieces on this roster later in the year, making them a much better basketball team. All of those things, you know, taken together, give me a real amount of joy right now that I haven't experienced in several years as a UMass fan. And yes, it's 3 games. And yes, we haven't played a Power 5 school. And yes, you know, these are not, you know, we're not defeating world beaters out here. It's not even so much about the opponents, though I think all three of them are actually better than perhaps their brand name would indicate. Although Northeastern, I think people realize at this point because of their tournament appearance last year and what Bill Cohn's done, is a good club. But beyond that, it's the way in which the team has shared the basketball. It's the emergence, the pleasant surprise. That's not even, that's an understatement. So much better than a pleasant surprise. Pleasant surprise sounds like, you know, like a little extra sugar in your lemonade. It's the fucking absolute control of the basketball game that Sean East has exhibited since the moment he set foot on stuff is, it just warms the heart. That's the reality. I do this show because I love this program, but sometimes, and somebody said it tonight, I forget where, I think I saw it on UMass Hoops, whoever said this, shout out to them, they said, yeah, I always loved UMass basketball, but it's been a while since I liked UMass basketball this much, you know, and that was perfectly put, because in 3 games, which, let's not, you know, kid ourselves, that's 10% basically of the regular season. That's the equivalent of, you know, 2 weeks of a baseball season. It's not much, but it's not a completely insignificant sample size. Through 3 games, there is just a lot to like. It's a lot of fun. I don't know where it goes from here. And I want to be clear, if the next three games are disastrous, I'll come on here and I'll probably be really frustrated and I'll express that frustration. So part of fandom, right, is just the ups and the downs. That's what it is. And I'm not going to pretend otherwise. But right now, you know, there's people on Twitter, I think, who are like, oh, well, I just mentioned this a moment ago, but it's another, you know, example of this. But people are like, oh, well, you know, like they had the great recruiting class and Derek Kellogg's last season here and blah. It's like, yeah, they did. And that team started out well, too. And that was a lot of fun, too. Although I will say, I don't remember it being quite as fun as this. And I don't quite know why, but I have a feeling it's because the composition of this team is qualitatively different insofar as during the Kellogg years, and I've said this before, not always, but a lot of the time he had really athletically gifted players or guys who could do one or two things, you know, well. But there wasn't a sense of spacing the floor, of finding, of making the extra pass, of sort of a clear identity, as much as they tried to brand the, you know, what was the thing with Chaz, that your pain or whatever it was, the analogy, the acronym that, whose, you know, no one could actually remember. And even though I loved Jazz and I would never liken this team to a tournament team yet, it's nothing like that, and that Jazz team was fantastic, the brand of basketball with which that team was those teams were associated, both when they were quite good, and those were really fun teams, particularly that first NIT run was a delight, but even so, the brand of that basketball team was one characterized by a certain athletic dominance, a lot of alley-oops, and what Derek Kellogg himself characterized as spurtability. Not sure if that's a made-up word or not. It's actually not a terrible word. But it was a team that would routinely be like stagnant in the half court and be down, you know, seven and just like playing like shit and then put on like an unbelievable 16-0 run over a 2.5 minute stretch and you'd be like, holy shit, and they'd win the game. And I mean, I'm obviously being a little bit hyperbolic, but that was basically how, when you think back, that's sort of what you remember. With this group, and you know, that was a little less true with a little bit true as well, particularly, you know, with the Dejan Giroux group and when they opened the year 10-3 in 2016-2017. With this group, it feels like, it's a weird analogy because I'm going to be very clear, I don't mean that they're like the Spurs in any way whatsoever. But in the way that the San Antonio Spurs were defined by spacing the floor, by a bunch of guys who were really solid, but who, you know, you had different guys who could do things on different nights and were not defined by a flashiness, just solid. It's like that. It's not like the Spurs. I don't want anybody confusing the two. But what I'm noting is like the poise and just calmness that the freshmen play with, particularly the kind of big three trio that we've seen emerge thus far in East, Weeks, and Mitchell respectively, is so unique. I mean, they just play with themselves. They're not athletically overwhelming at all. But they move the ball, they make the extra pass, they pound you. And press, the genius of the press packages is not that it's exploiting our apparent athleticism. It's that it's utilizing our intelligence as a basketball team. It's allowing guys to make the right reads and to disrupt opposing offenses almost without being athletically overwhelming. There's some athletes out there, but it's about the way that the guys move. There's a synchronicity to it. There's a way that these guys are moving. And at some point, I would like to have former host Andrew Kalagi, a.k.a. A. Kalagi for longtime listeners, on the show because he's pretty good with X's and O's. Or I would actually like to do a little X and O tutorial because as much as I know basketball, you know, I have a day job, right? Like I don't follow the latest in press packages and I want to understand it at a little bit more of a and the same goes with the offense. but at a little bit more of a technical level, because there just is this like synchronicity to it, the way guys are moving. And like, yes, that sometimes leads to a run out for, you know, or a tip or whatever from a Samba or a Preston, guys who are notably quite athletic. And I hope we'll see more of that when Cy Chapman gets back. But it's not the athleticism that's standing out. It's the way that the team is moving in sync with one another, and there's like a seamlessness to it that really surprises you, given that so many of them are freshmen. I think it certainly helps that four of these guys, you know, played high school ball together, and that, you know, there's other connections too, like TJ and Carl played in the same AAU system, and so there's a familiarity there. And East is the kind of guy who just loves to hoop. You can just tell he just loves to hoop, and you can listen to McCall talk about it. And so he fits in sort of seamlessly because he makes the right reads consistently, and he plays out of that pick and roll spread stuff with Trey Mitchell so well. And so there's just this coherence there that is like really fun to watch. And what happens from here, I don't know. But right now, November 12th, this is a lot of fun. That's all I gotta say. It's a lot of fun. So, quickly, I want to, because I think this will be primarily driven by your questions tonight, but I think the exceeding of expectations is thus far, and it's not just the outcomes, because there was always a chance you could go 3-0, although I kind of thought we would be 2-1 at this point. And frankly, I was fearful we might be 1-2, because winning on the road is not easy, and we gritted that game out at Fairfield. You know, we can go through the games, right? They played really well at Lowell, against Lowell to open the year. They struggled a little bit against Fairfield, but they had a great run there and got it together and held on for a nice road win against a group of, you know, older guys, which was encouraging. And then tonight against Northeastern, and just all around well played because of our shooting. So we've shown an ability to win in different ways already, which is very encouraging. But broadly speaking, I don't know where I was going with that thought. It's the coherence and the way... So here's what I was saying. So what are the things that where we've exceeded expectations that have made the kind of overall play more compelling? It starts and ends with Sean East. I mean, I thought that he would kind of by default become this, like, you know, backup type who had to play in a starter's role, and that, you know, Colton Mitchell would play a little bit and Keon would get some touches there and, you know, Bugs would come off the bench. I had, and I thought he had potential later in the year to emerge as, like, I think it probably, if I went back through my tweets or an earlier episode, it said, like, you know, could emerge as like a 6 and 2.5 guy, 2.5 assists, 6 points, and, you know, later in the year and kind of been serviceable, but that, you know, the idea of, you know, that it was going to be hard for us to score in the half court when we weren't, you know, on a press break, you know, off a press. And I just sort of made my peace with that. And I was like, you know, if Carl can get hot and TJ can make some shots and Trey can do his thing and Samba can slash and Cy Chapman can, you know, get some putbacks, I was like, then, you know, we could maybe eke out a 500 or just sub 500 season, particularly against this schedule. I just was colossally wrong. I just had no clue that Sean East would be as gifted as he has been. And it seems like, even though he put up roughly similar numbers in all three games, it felt like in tonight's game in particular, like, there were stretches where he was the best player on the court. Like, there was no one on the court who, and the same was true for stretches of that Fairfield game. You just wanted the ball in his hands. Like, he just was not making mistakes with the basketball. And I don't just mean, like, didn't make turnovers, which he didn't. He has 20 assists and 2 turnovers in 3 games. I don't care who you're playing. That's impressive. But the way he would pull it back out at times, the way he would make the extra pass, like, I could watch tape of this kid for hours. Like, he just makes the right decision. And that's what I kind of didn't totally realize about him going into the year. And if I did realize that, I was like, okay, he makes a great decision, but he's not going to get to the rim. False, Sage. False. Not Sage-like on this one. You were off. Like, I did not realize that he would make that beautiful little floater, you know, I mean, that he could kind of contort himself in midair and finish without it even looking awkward. Like, he's just really good. I think it felt maybe a tiny bit fluky, like he was playing particularly well. And there'll be games, like, you know, where some of these shots, you know, that have gone in, maybe will go in and out or whatever. But, like, he doesn't take dumb shots. So when you don't take dumb shots and you have good shooters around you and you have a legitimate dominant big in Trey Mitchell, you just have to score when necessary, when the play breaks down. And he's done that and so much more. And, I mean, I'm just trying to contain my enthusiasm with the kid, because I think with Trey Mitchell, you just know how dominant he is. Like, he had 20 tonight and he wasn't even, like, his best. And that's, like, preposterously impressive for a freshman to go for 20 and 6 or whatever and 18 and 7 last game without even, like, you can just see, like, yeah, he made some mistakes, you know, he failed to kick it out correct, you know, properly, and he made a couple turnovers here, and he, you know, like, and he still put up 20 and 6, so you kind of knew you were going to get a really solid year out of the kid. And with TJ Weeks, it was like there was a lot of indication in the offseason, like, this kid can really shoot it. And so you're like, all right, Carl Peter 2.0, another shooter. You don't quite know what that's going to look like. You don't quite realize, like, what he did against Lowell, where he's just, like, absolutely lights out. But you're like, all right, like, great. We'll have another shooter, you know? Well, what East is doing is so impressive because the ball expands a tremendous amount. And the loss of Colton Mitchell, who, by the way, was terrific in that first game. As I said on Twitter, he reminds me of Derek Kellogg as a player. Slow and steady wins the race. Not a freak athlete, but just really good on the press, like, doesn't really turn it over. So him breaking his hand was a really tough break, because it was like, okay, that's automatically now putting Sean East in the spotlight big time, because it's clear Keon is so much better off the ball, and his defense tonight was by far his best game of the season tonight. His defense, as well as his 3-point shooting tonight, or at least he hit 1-3. You know, it's so clear he's better off the ball. He's so much more comfortable there. McCall said it himself. So it's becoming clear. And by the way, John Bugs, don't sleep on him. He has a better looking release than you think, and eventually it's going to go down. And his defense is so solid that he's going to get on the court. But the reality is, Sean East has emerged as the point guard, and not only the point guard, but the guy who has the ball in his hands the most. I mean, obviously that's the case often with the point guard, but you just didn't quite realize he was going to emerge at this caliber this quickly. And there's tonight we saw flashes of explosiveness that I was like, whoa, like, that was a different gear. Like, I didn't see that coming. Like, and it wasn't explosiveness in the full court per se. It was just like getting to the rim. Like, he just gets there. He goes downhill a little more than I realized. You know, he's mostly sort of, you think of him a little bit more as like a craftier guy, but there's like weird touches of like Kenny Anderson, to go back to the old school New Jersey Net. Obviously not at that level yet, you know, but like if I was McCall, I'd tell him to watch Kenny Anderson tape. In fact, I should tweet that. It's not like Nick Van Exel. I'm just thinking of lefty point guards of the era when I used to watch a lot of NBA when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, because now I just watch UMass and like random college games. But the point is, it's just been a delight. Everything else, I think, played out according to plan. And, you know, but the big question mark was always point guard play. So, and what's interesting is that because of Johnny's success, that's allowed us to get away in the first, in really in this Fairfield game in particular, with Pierre really struggling. And Pierre struggled a bit in that for stretches in that Lowell game as well. He was fantastic tonight, and it was so delightful to see him break through. But I think it allowed, I think East's steady hand has allowed a guy like Pierre, Keon, and then tonight, Samba to have an off night once in a while, because it just gives you the steadiness of a point guard to find open shooters. You're not always going to have nights like tonight where you shoot lights out as a team. And like as you saw against Fairfield, if the team continues to defend, they'll be okay. So what else has impressed me thus far about this team? Team defense, just the cohesion of it. You know, they get out on shooters tonight. They struggled a little bit at the outset. They weren't great on the boards, but all in all, the presses are really, you know, you have to give Bergeron an immense amount of credit for instituting these presses, because they are making teams tired late in games. You could see Northeastern sort of visibly worn down late, and you could see you know, them just getting uncomfortable later on and sped up. It's not always about the steals and the turnovers, though there were many tonight. I think there were 10. It's often just about the way they get out of their rhythm. So team defense, Sean East, and but yeah, and then like just team role definition, guys understand like what they're supposed to be doing and like how they can contribute, and every guy on this team is contributing. Like, it sounds cliche, it sounds like coach speak, but even the guys on the bench, they're just loving it. They're enjoying the success of their teammates. It's fun to watch. It's like we live in an, you know, I am as complicit as anyone. We live in a culture of cynicism and you know, at times haterism, and I can, God knows I participate in it, but this team thus far through three games is a really delightful antidote to that. It's like there's a positivity there. It's fun. It's like it's infectious. I think McCall said in his postgame press tonight, he called it a toxic quality. I think he meant like an infectious quality, but I'll do the words. He can do the X's and O's. So that's been great. Concerns thus far. I have a couple modest concerns that could be addressed in a big time way if we get word on the two players who are currently not suited up. So first of all, I'm a little bit concerned about Colton Mitchell being out, because I think he really did bring a nice pace as a backup, a serviceable backup at the one during the Lowell game. And I think particularly in that Fairfield game, when East was out, the offense really struggled to kind of get things going, and I have concerns about our depth from a not a defensive perspective, because a guy like DeJuri Baptiste, who's been great on D, has not scored yet this year. And by the way, Preston Santos, fantastic on D, and his tip-ins have been, again, delightful. But I do believe that if a guy gets in foul trouble, of the four guys who the four sort of core scoring options thus far, the three freshmen plus Samba and a Carl, I do think at some point you're going to need another scorer. You're just going to, because you just can't surrender leads. And there are two guys, Cy Chapman, who's been out for personal reasons, missed the first three games, who was awesome, by the way, in the exhibition game, and who I've in many ways think is the second or third best player on this team, can be at least. Cy Chapman and Dabaji Walker, who I think is a freak mismatch for teams. 6'8", 6'9", can shoot it, can play down low, could be a dominant A-10 scorer, at least at points. Both those guys would give us immense value off the bench. If you get those guys back, you're looking at, on any given night, seven guys who can give you 25. And that's not an exaggeration. Seven guys who can give you 20, 25 points. Now, you're not going to get 25 points. I'm just saying, like, it's not, often you look at a team and you're like, oh, there's like seven or eight guys who could score 10. We've already seen on this roster thus far in three games, Pierre has only had, I think his high has been 18, but he, you know, in his past, he's obviously had way more than that. So Pierre, Weeks, Mitchell, East, who's gotten up to like 17 or 18. And I mean, I think Samba can get to 20 at some point too. So he's had a couple of 12. But the point is, like, that's five guys who can clearly get 15. And now you add two, that's immense offensive depth.
without those guys, you're kind of like an injury away from being a little bit concerned about where the depth is, where your depth is in terms of scoring. And I think with the unbelievably challenging games coming up, my fear is that, you know, if things aren't flowing and if
East goes down, I mean, you just need to find offense from somewhere. And I would really like to have those dudes back. So that's my take thus far in the season. You know, there's been so much encouraging stuff throughout the season. You know, three wins in kind of three different ways. I think tonight and the first game against Lowell were fairly similar. But in general, just a lot to be excited about. And, you know, I mean, will I be singing a different tune on Saturday if we lose to Central Connecticut? Sure shit, I will. Yeah, absolutely. But that's what the fucking show is about. It's like a real-time response to these things. And the notion that I should not be enthusiastic because I should temper my, you know, expectations based on years past is, it's not a silly one, but it's just not a very fun one. It's like, and by the way, it's not just the outcomes. It's the way they're playing. It really is the way they're playing. Like, if they just had a terrible shooting night against Central Connecticut and lost like 50-49, and you never know, shit happens, I'd probably be apocalyptically upset, but I'd be like, you know what? They had a terrible shooting night and they still held them to 50 points. Like, there are positives, I think, in terms of this team's effort level that you'll pretty much get night in, night out. You'll have a couple stinkers. And I just desperately hope they take care of business in the next two and enter Mohegan 5-0. Because there's a buzz that's building already. I think it's a combination of people excited about the hockey team from last year, so over what's going on with football, and an enthusiasm around the university more broadly as to all the positive things happening at UMass, that people are just waiting for it to break out with UMass. Like, I have talked at length on the show about my quantitative deficiencies, but my feel, and I know that's imprecise, and it is quantitative in nature, in that I can quantify how many tweets I'm getting and how many people are like, the number of people who are just coming out of the woodwork tonight who are like, there's something about this team, there's something about this team. And I don't want to get overly excited because they are young, and I want the kids to maintain an even keeledness, but there's something going on there and people are starting to get pretty excited. And you know, we'll see where it goes, but I'm telling you right now, if UMass enters Mohegan 5-0, there was already a huge UMass turnout at that, going to those games. There'd be a lot of people, you know, coming down from Western Mass and you know, elsewhere to those games. Like, you get a shot at the defending national champ, like, you're 5-0. There's an enthusiasm you can't contain. A lot of people home before the holidays, like, just, you know, it's going to get exciting here. You know, you have to temper expectations to a degree because they are so young and we've struggled so much, but right now it's fun, and that's the key theme of the night for me. All right, let's get to an extended mailbag tonight and kind of let that serve as kind of the basis for the rest of the program. Remember, podcast is brought to you by the fine folk at Five College Movers. FiveCollegeMovers.com. Stress-free moving in Pine Valley. An absolutely terrific company that cares about this program, that cares about UMass athletics, and that you should absolutely hire if you're moving anywhere. All right, let's go to the questions.
Little town blues are melting away. I'll make a brand new start of it. It'll be yours. If I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. It's up to you, New York.
Joel Southall, great friend of the show. Actually, this is a little too niche. I'm going to get into it at some point on another pod, but he asks about, he has this great idea. Check him out on Twitter. Joel, J-O-E-L, Southall, S-O-U-T-H-A-L-L, good dude. He has this idea of doing like a flagship universities tournament with all 50 schools. And so he's got a whole elaborate thing. He tweeted at me and Bamford the other day. It's very clever. So check it out. But he says UMass is the 43 seed in the U bracket. Too low, too high, just right. I would definitely think that's too low because there's like, how many flagships are you better than? Definitely Alaska, definitely New Hampshire, Maine. Well, actually, New Hampshire, Maine, Vermont's really good. I mean, there's got to be more than seven that we're better than, right? Oh, none of the SECs. Both Dakotas. Probably Montana. Definitely Idaho. Yeah, we're better than 43. Fuck out of here, dude. Wonderful tradition in American sport. Maroon Musket, former guest of the program. If you could add one player from the Lapis era to this team, who would it be and why? It's a really good question. Because there were some good players despite the four disappointing years of Steve Lapis. So it would not be like Artie Bowers or one of the more like athletic scoring guards because it's not actually, wait. If Artie Bowers could play within the flow of an offense, he would actually be really good because they need a guy who can score off the bounce, who's an off guard. So he actually might be my choice. For some reason, did he only play a year? You gotta realize, like, my connection with the program during the Lapis years was by far the lowest of my lifetime. I remember my sophomore year of high school, which I believe was Lapis's first year at the helm. Yeah, I didn't go to a single game. That was the only year of my childhood from second grade on that I did not go to a single game. And I just remember, like, wow, I didn't go to a single game this year. I went, I think, freshman year. No, freshman year was Bruiser. Maybe it was my junior high school. There was one year I just didn't go. And I don't remember if that was already Bowers' year, but the guys on that, so Anthony Anderson was great, but you have Sean East in a similar role. And Lazmi was a, Stefan Lazmi as well as Mike Lazmi were both recruits of Lapis, if I'm not mistaken. Stefan Lazmi, like, as fantastic as he wasn't good during the Lapis years. He was good once Lapis left. And you already have, like, really capable bigs, provided that Cy Chapman gets back. So it's not him. Mike Lazmi had that one great year as kind of, like, was a bit of a hybrid, like, guard, kind of a combo guard. Strong, could shoot it a little bit, could get to the rim. Averaged, like, maybe 9 points his freshman year, him and Gabe Lee. And then I think they both left, if I'm not mistaken, right? Is that what happened? So he was good, and he was like, he could do a little bit of, like, imagine for newer UMass fans, imagine, like, this is a very strange analogy, but if Rayshon Miller, a walk-on on McCall's first team, at UMass 2 years ago. Imagine if he was like awesome, like an awesome version of him. That was Mike Lasme. It's like a strange little. There's a little bit of Charlton Clark for older UMass fans to Mike Lasme's game, if I remember. I don't know what happened to him. He was gone after a year. Didn't he like play pro soccer in Africa? Or am I making that up? I don't know. He's up there, but Artie Bowers, I think, would play team ball and provide like a lift when a possession broke down. Sean East is increasingly doing more of that, though, and so like, would there be chemistry issues in terms of Bowers taking minutes away from the veteran Pierre, and would he limit the maturation of weeks? I don't know. So, boy, I mean, I'm gonna say Bowers right now, but it's Bowers. It's probably Mike Lasme. I think. Like, what does this team need right now? Like, certainly, if Cy Chapman doesn't get healthy, then the answer is probably, you know, senior year Stefan Lasme or something. Gosh, who the fuck was even on those Lapis teams? Man, I wish I had a roster in front of me. Like, Lawrence Carrier, was he on those teams? Not Lawrence Carrier, that's from Syracuse. That was Lawrence Moten. Lawrence Carrier, yeah, the kid from, you know, like the sort of big kid who could shoot it a little bit. Kyle Wilson, no. Who the fuck was on those teams? Gabe Lee, I don't even know, man. This is getting too difficult. Give me some names. All right. Let's see what else we got. Let's see. So somebody said Dante Milligan was a Lapis recruit. I don't know if that's true, but if he was, like, he'd be a decent addition because he's good size off the bench and he's a good role player and he's not going to get in terms of chemistry issues. He'd fit the vibe of this team. Sitchman, the great R. Sitchman, great friend of the show. He says, more Santos? Yes, right? Sneaky good. He's been terrific. Like, and he's every game he gets like one or two awesome tip-ins at the most opportune moments. He's a freak athlete, just glides through the air. I would like to see him shoot the ball. I don't know if he can do that. If he can, yeah, you got to get him in a little more. But he's been so good the way they're using him, and I think they're probably masking any offensive deficiencies quite well by the way they use him in the press and the way they use him as like an offensive rebounder and a tip-in guy. So like, I really like how they've used him, and I think one of these days that'll go from 4 to 9 points really quickly. You know, if everybody else is playing as well as they are, like, I think they're probably using him pretty effectively. In fact, I've got to give him a call, and if Bergeron's involved in it, a lot of credit for the way they've done roster. Impacts. There's a lot of predictability among the players in a good way. I think people sort of understand like what their roles are in a really good way. So then, Riff Raps Recap, P. Veal, always has good questions. Great friend of the show. P. Veal 7 says, he notes from Jay Burnham, the play-by-play man, there was a note on the broadcast tonight that fewer UMass fouls thus far this year. It's been a consistent pet peeve of Pat's for years, he says, because stupid fouls lead to free throw points later. Do you think this is something McCall's emphasizing or a byproduct of the roster? It's a good question, because I think there's probably a reflexive ability or a reflexive tendency to believe that, you know, the departures of some of those guys who didn't play as tough on ball defense is what led to those fouls, which is true. So yeah, I think that is the roster turnover. I don't know. I feel like this team, it's probably also a little bit of a function of the press and the fact that they set that press up to trap and then kind of force turnovers or so they're not stuck in long possessions for quite some time, where I feel like last year's team would foul with you know, 7 seconds left on the shot clock a lot, or just sort of cave at that point. So I think it's probably a combination. Alex Silva, Marshmont 63, how many weeks till we cut down the nets in Brooklyn? Again, a snarky reference a little bit to what we were talking about earlier. The answer, as I've continued to say, is basically if there's 4 months left of this season, it's about 20 weeks, and then you got 52 more till the next one. I'm talking about 72 weeks, maybe. Maybe 124, whatever it is. So Sitchman now comes back with another question, a lighter-hearted one, which he says, UMass Twitter friends as candy. This is, of course, a reference to Son of Large Mark, a great friend of the show who asked me to do each player on the team as candy during the preview episode, which, frankly, anyone who listened to it knows it was one of the best segments we've ever done, and I'm my own biggest critic on the show, but that was fucking hilarious. So go back and listen to it. It's probably about the hour marker of the previous episode. In terms of UMass Twitter friends, this is very in the weeds, and I've come to realize recently that a lot of people listen to the show who don't follow the day-to-day, you know, banter and bullshit on UMass Twitter. As well they should, because a lot of that's pretty inside baseball. That said, you got to play to your base, and here it is for the diehards. I'll go over a few, and no, please don't take offense. It's like 11:45 if I miss you. I'm happy to answer it on Twitter if anyone cares. So you got to start with the youth. Sloven, he's a senior in high school at Amherst High, and he's always like mixing it up with the older guys. So you got to think of candy. Still a kid, and so you know you don't necessarily you can't go to the bar with it, right? Like it's so, oh man, so solid, but like, you know, qualitatively different because of his youth. Fuck, I think it's like, it's maybe a Twix bar, because it's like very good, but it's not you know your go-to, because he's not your age. He's different than the other candy bars. Like, that's a reality. So let's see who else. Fight Mass, the kind of inane, irreverent, you know, not particularly rule-bound, but really funny, eccentric candy. They're kind of like your experimental artisanal chocolate that you would get at, like, you know, a farmer's market. There might even be like a little bit of weed in it, if we're being honest. Like, it's like you're like asking the guy at the farmer's market, like, is it an edible? And he's kind of like, is it? And it's like not that much of an edible, but it's like enough that it's like, oh, this is a different type of candy. Sitchman, steady, consistent, knows who he is. I would have to put him in the Three Musketeers or you know, if you're more of a Milky Way camp, like it's just, he's solid. He's got like, there's just traits. Also has the right stuff, and you can and has no tolerance for bullshit. So like, I would say he's like kind of a Snickers, you know. It's like,
it's like, I don't always like Snickers, you know, in the world, but fuck if I don't respect it, you know? I mean, although he's also made, like, has a very good sense of humor, so maybe Snickers is almost a little too serious. Snickers might almost be like, yeah, like, you make a case that Son of Large Mark is actually peanut M&Ms, you know, like a tiny bit different than, but also like very much on the team. Speaking of UMass fan 33, very passionate, relentless on officials, passionate. Too easy to make a weed joke there. Already have made that joke. Like, very knowledgeable about a lot of the sort of factual stuff, but also has some humor in there. I would put him in, but he's like a little bit out there because he's in Colorado. A little bit of a mystery man in that regard. But like, he's a mystery man because he's married young, lives in, like, you can't, you know, there's a lot of elements to him. So what's something with an interesting aftertaste, sort of long-lasting but solid? Like, and some of the things he says will stick with you, so I might go with, I actually, because it's like, oh, I hadn't thought about that, good point. And he'll come back and be like, I mentioned 6 months ago that Sean East would be really good, you know, and like, oh, good call. Sort of milk duds in that regard. Who else am I thinking of? I mean, PVL7 is like a guy who's like just always comes with the right question for the show, doesn't get involved in some of the dumb shit on Twitter. So it's like he's there and it's like good every time, but like you're not even always going to notice him on like during like the inane banter days. And the questions are good. You could say a nerds. I don't mean that he's a nerd. I just mean that nerds have some of those qualities. Who are some other? Gaber 205, very passionate, really good dude. I mean, he's a solid candy bar. You know, it's like Gabe may have once been, like, in his college days, I didn't know him, but he may have been like some like really fucking good Sour Patch Kids that were like, whoa, like there's a little too much sugar on that. But now he's like got two kids and he's like a solid candy bar. He's in Nestle's Crunch. Who else were like the stalwart UMass Derby people? So I'm definitely gonna offend somebody for not getting to him here. Like, it's, this is just purely a mentions thing. Like, more hardcore UMass Twitter, which I respect a lot. He sees the value in it in terms of promoting the program. Oh, McKinney, Stats McKinney, fucking relentless Twitter guy. Something very technical, something very precise, something with the right consistency. I'd say he's a junior mint and he's a little bit younger. Perfect. Eric Friedlander, another guy in that vein, insofar as he graduated, I believe, the same year, and he's always got a good gem, always going back to the, you know, you should follow all these people, by the way, if you don't. We'll go back to UMass basketball in a moment. Friedlander is very informed, very good at the internet, knows the subcultures of other internet spheres pretty well. So he's creative, but still pretty logical. I don't want to give him a candy bar because he's young. The candy bar is a little more old school. Like, he's a he's like a newer candy that a lot of people are talking about. And you're maybe almost like, well, why do I want to try that? Because I've got plenty of older friends. But then you're like, no, Friedlander. Yeah. So, like, but I don't want to be
gimmick candy, you know, like some bullshit, like flavored sour, flavored candy corn or some shit, you know, like, so, Eric, you might have to let me know. He's a soccer guy, so there may have to be like a little European influence there. Toblerone, perhaps. That's a little bit far fetched, but all right. I've definitely like missed some people, and I sincerely apologize for that. Brian Winslow, there's a bunch of you, you know, but I'll get to some of them next episode because I'm just looking at my mentions and oh, Zach is God. I got a hit. Football guy, so not a core hoop head, and you could say Fear the Triangle in terms of hockey. So I would say it's like something really solid, but not in the same category as everyone else to some degree. So, you know, I don't know if that's sour watermelons. And you go into the sour realm, and then Fear the Triangle becomes Sour Patch Kids, or if they're like world class taffies. But I'm not really a taffy guy, so I wouldn't put them in that camp. We've done chocolates. You know what? You could make the case that one of them is gummy bears and one of them is Swedish fish. Boom. End of discussion. Let's go back to the questions. The Woody East, at The Woody East, good follow, by the way. It says, compared to previous McCall and recent Kellogg teams, how do you see this team faring in the A-10? Kellogg teams faded, even good ones. I feel like better effort and team play plus depth lends itself to a team that gets better for a change in a subpar A-10. So, terrific question. I'm not sure I'm fully prepared to accept the premise that it's a subpar A-10. I understand that both Davidson and St. Bonaventure have opened, two of the arguably top four teams in the league have opened a combined, Davidson widely regarded as a top three, by most a top two and some a top, number one. Have opened a combined 0-5, and that is disastrous, no doubt. It's still early, and I actually tweeted the other day that those two teams in particular are so well coached that I feel like they get confused early on in the year because they're just running so much stuff. Can improve in league play, can be, you know, improved in league play. I do have depth concerns, and I've said this, you know, earlier on the show. You got to get Debaji Walker or Cy Chapman, at least one of them, ideally two of them, in your rotation because you need that sixth, ideally seventh scorers. So I think if you get one, you're in good shape. If you get two, you're kind of getting to a sky's the limit point. You're like, could we finish sixth? Could we finish fifth? Who knows? You know, but you know, I'm not quite prepared to say the A-10 is subpar. I know VCU hasn't looked great thus far. I haven't watched a ton, but it's very early. We're 3-0. So much basketball left to be played. So I don't quite want to go there just yet. All right, what else we got? I'm fucking fading. I apologize, but there's a lot of Twitter tonight, so I apologize if I don't get to everyone. Fucking A, I can't get these questions. It's so annoying. Okay. Who else did I miss? I'll try to do really quick ones.
Someone says Boston Sports. I forget his handle, but he says, "How the fuck is Chapman going to fit in when he returns?" And the answer is like seamlessly. Imagine taking the minutes, some of the minutes of Dejiri, but adding an instant offense, and also taking some of the minutes when Samba's in foul trouble or struggling, and adding a new dimension at the four, so that you know you basically have two really solid scoring bigs down low. He could do a lot of different things. Cy Chapman, this guy's the limit in terms of his talent. He could do a lot of different things. I'm really excited to see what they'll do with him. Bill Vaughn asks, how will lack of a home court advantage hurt come A-10 play? Should it continue? I reject the premise. If this team is playing as well as they are tonight and they enter conference play 9-4, 10-3, something like that, and I'm not saying it's anywhere close to happening, the Mullins will be rocking, and especially during weekend games. And I know it's early. Like, I know nobody was there tonight. Don't worry. Don't worry. Just let the guys win. There's a lot of residual negativity from years past. But once you get people in there and see their effort, like, my dad's already going to the South Carolina game. It'll get there. I'm not going to live in that sort of, like, where are the fans? Where are the fans? The fans will show up. It may take a year. I mean, I don't care. They'll show up. Don't worry about the fans. And there's always a home court advantage regardless because, A, there's a couple thousand people in there who give a shit. Got decently loud at points tonight. And, B, you know, you're sleeping. Your home court advantage is about more than just the fans. That's important, and we're going to get there. I'll do everything I can to help. But it's also about just sleeping in your own bed, knowing your rims, knowing your locker room. You know, there's a lot of that stuff. Even if there's, you know, 10 people in the stands, you have slightly something of a home court advantage. Joe Roche, the great Joe Roche. Do you think Carl is struggling or isn't getting as many looks because so many of the freshmen have experience together that really he's the one getting worked into the on-court ball rotation? Well, I thought he was great tonight, so maybe Joe crafted that without realizing how fantastic a game he had. Ask me in five games, but I'm not concerned about Carl. I'm just not. He's a great shooter. And most of his struggles, he hit a little bit of foul trouble in the opener, and then he just went cold in game two, and then tonight he was great. So I don't really think he's struggling. I think three games is a little too early to say. I do think he's probably getting a few less looks because Weeks is getting some of those touches, and that's not a bad thing. I always said with Carl Pierre, I said, if he's taking 20 shots a night or averaging 20 points a game, I said this all offseason. I was like, we're in real trouble. I was like, the more guys that are contributing and the less we're depending on him for our scoring, the better we are. And I think that's one of my predictions that's proven true and, you know, I'm encouraged by. So I'm not terribly worried about that situation. Okay. Matt Broderick. Oh, I could have done Joe Roche for the candy. Good Worcester guy, like family man, has a great sense of humor. Joe Roche, who would he be? You're just running out of candy at this point is the challenge. You know, I'd put him in that candy bar category, which is a decidedly dad energy choice, but it is what it is. Matt Broderick, good friend of the show. Honestly, why the fuck aren't the student sections filled? How do we get students to understand they are necessary to success? So I'm just over these questions. Not that they're not legitimate ones, but if you've been following UMass Athletics for a while and you've been talking about UMass Athletics for a while, this question is a perennial. It's been going on forever and it will go on forever. And the reality is, as we saw with hockey, once the team has sustained success, whatever that means, pretty quickly the folks come out. Even 2 years ago when the hockey team was 500, for those Vermont games in the Hockey East tournament, if I recall correctly, they had like 3,000 students. The students will show up. It'll take them a while. The buzz will build. There's some who are there now. The next ones will come next. Kids are bandwagon jumpers like everybody else. You know, I think there are some things we can do, you know, like the Zoomass Barstool Twitter account or whatever does generate some buzz. You can utilize that. You can, you know, do some t-shirt giveaways. There's all those things on the margins you can do. You know, you can If you're the head coach, you can continue to build relationships with people on campus when you have time and spread the word. But first of all, like, you as a fan, if you know anyone on campus, tell them. Just be like, because I think there is, and I've said this at length on the show, and I even wrestled with it. There is a perception where it's like, in New England, it's like, you know, why would you waste your time on college sports? Like, you watch the Patriots. It's like, sometimes you just have to assert, like, your identity in terms of, like, your fandom. It's like, yeah, I love UMass basketball. It's a lot of fun.
Not everyone in my dorm does, but it's fun. Come with me. It's a cool thing. And there's something cool about being on the ground floor. It's like, yeah, like, maybe it's not the fucking monkey bar or whatever kids are doing on Thursday night, and, like, it's not the Blarney blowout or whatever, but it's like, guess what? It's fun. If you like basketball, go to the game. Fucking cheer your school on. Like, 20 years from now, you're going to be sitting around being like, watching UMass when they're awesome and being like, oh, I should have gone to more games as a student, or you're going to just be lying and pretending you went. But my point is, these questions about student attendance dog even the most intense SEC fan bases and Duke and elsewhere. College basketball, if you're not a serious fan, like, the product in terms of just, like, sort of sex appeal, if you will, pardon the phrase, but, like, you gotta, like, step out of your, and I'm saying this about myself too, you gotta step out of your own kind of, like, delusional fanaticism, and, like, I think of it, like, in my sense, like, I'm a casual NBA fan, right? Like, the Knicks suck, so I'm just not watching them anymore, and when the playoffs come, I watch the playoffs. It's cool. It's fun. Northeastern UMass, like, unless you're a diehard College Hoops fan, which is, you know, a very small slice of the population, you maybe peripherally aware that Northeastern made the tournament last year, but watch. South Carolina shows up at the Mullen Center, you'll get fans, you'll get students there. So, you know, some of it's scheduling, some of it's just, you know, years of disappointment. But the reality is, like, once the team gets good, you'll have a critical mass.
It might take a while, it might take 20 games. They'll be there. They always are. And it's like, you can tie yourself into knots getting worked up over it. And I do, and I probably will continue to some degree. But it's just like, fuck it. You can't get caught up in it. They'll show up. Tell people, tweet about it, wear your gear, make it a part of your identity, make it a part of your lifestyle. And slowly, you know, you'll convert people without even having to hit them over the head with it. It's just like, yeah, I'm going. It's fun. It's a great group of kids. Fun team. Play really hard. I like this group. Done. Andrew Leonardo Roy asks, who makes a half-court shot first, Curry Xavier or the Bennett K? And the answer is me. And Bennett answered, not Bennett. I was always fairly good at half-court shots. I was actually, if I don't say myself so myself, quite good at basketball until I was 13, because I'm not fast. I'm not terribly athletic, but I'm I know where to be, and I could shoot it, and I could handle the ball well, so I could hit a half court shot. Mayor of Newmass, RP Minuteman 314. Ooh, he's another candy guy, another Worcester guy, younger. I can't do candies anymore because there's fucking not enough candy.
Has anyone surpassed your expectations so far? I think I alluded to this, but obviously East. Anyone not making as big of an impact as you anticipated? I wouldn't say so. Like, that's one of the things that's been delightful. I mean, DeGiri hasn't even scored. Really good on defense. And, you know, I never expected much scoring out of him. So, yeah, I feel pretty good. Nick Baker, 63. More of a statement from last podcast. Sean East, zero star recruit and playing like the best freshman in A-10. No dispute there. He also asked, how does Coach McCall balance playing time, as it seems he has been playing 10 guys a game? I think he's done a really good job of it. I think we're going to learn a lot more about that if either Walker or Chapman get healthy. I think it's more difficult when Colton Mitchell comes back, probably around the start of conference play, just because East, like, it actually really helps East to get a breather. But if East is as dominant as he's been in the last three games, it's like, well, how do you sit him, you know? So that'll be interesting.
Squirts 14 says, if Hockey East was an all sports conference, how many Hockey East basketball championship banners would there be at Mullins? It's almost impossible to say because the whole dynamic of the conference would change. Because, like, the obvious answers would be like, well, UConn would have a zillion, but the things that got them there in the first place would be different, you know, in terms of conference affiliation. So, I would say, I don't know, if it's in 70 years, they'd have 10. I mean, BC would have some. UConn would have a bunch. And if you're going by kind of the traditional logic of it, of like who's takes these sports most seriously right now, but then, of course, things could change. Those would be like your three leaders. It could be like the WCC out west, where it's like Gonzaga, St. Mary's, and then like BYU, and then nobody else. It could be like UMass, UConn, BC, because UNH isn't doing shit. Vermont would like steal one once in a while. Although they did beat Northwestern, which was unbelievable. Shouts to Merrimack. All right, let's go to the next question. Gaber 205 says, we are getting a dub in the casino. Prove me wrong. So, yeah, it probably won't be the Virginia game, but I'm not going to say that we couldn't beat St. John's with them playing. They're young-ish, and they have a new coach, and second day of a tournament, early game. I wouldn't surprise me if we upset them. Eric Friedlander, how does McCall keep his team humble with easier games coming up off a fast start with some good wins? I totally agree. It's a very legitimate concern, and we cannot take any games advantage. Delighted as I am by the start, we are not good enough to take any team in America for granted. Should that not even be much of a concern with this group? I don't think it should be, but like, it's just natural. Like, no one's going to play their absolute best every night. So, like, it could be, I the way I kind of hope it plays out is, like, if we do have those struggles, that it lasts for a half, we're down, like, 4 or 6 or 8 or whatever, and we get it together and pull out a win like we did at Fairfield. But I think these two next opponents are probably inferior to Fairfield, and we're at home. So, I hope it doesn't happen. I'm not counting my chickens before they hatch. Jeff Piantadosi says, am I wrong in thinking when this freshman class are seniors, if all remain together, they will be a top 10 team? That's where, like, I probably got to blow the whistle, you know? I mean, you never know. You never know. But top 10 is a whole different stratosphere. And there's just so many things that have to break your way. And there's so much you have to do just to get there in terms of schedule and... Of course, if they all stay all 4 years, and you have Javon Garcia coming in next year, who's fantastic, and McCory and whoever else they bring in, and maybe Tyrone Weeks' other son, who'd be a freshman. You never know, but I'm gonna say no right now. Someone else asks in that same vein, can this team go dancing in March? I do not think they're there yet, but you know, there's always the possibility that you know, you don't play that first day in Brooklyn. You beat somebody in the second day on Thursday. And then, like, there's some other upset somewhere. And then in the quarterfinals, you're, like, a 7 seed or, you know, a 6 seed or something, 8 seed. Instead of playing the 1, you're playing, like, the 4 or the 9 or whatever. And then all of a sudden, you're in the semis. And so you never know what happens in Brooklyn. And there is some depth here. And if you have Dubaji and Sai... No one's going to want to play us. That said, I'm not sure Sean East or anyone could win 4 days in a row in Brooklyn as a freshman. I don't know. I think there's more questions, but I can't really find them. I'm tired as fuck, and I need to go to sleep. As Cal would say, we love you, or I love you. Thanks for listening. Go UMass, and we'll check in on Saturday for the Central Connecticut game. Peace.